Hello, FCS Nation. It's time for your show. I'm your host, Kevin Marshall. And once again, I'm coming to you from the lovely confines of the Low Country of South Carolina, Charleston in particular. And joining me like he does each week is the co-host of this program, the quarterback of this program, Mr. Stone Lebanowitz. Stone, I know you want to join me in well wishes and just absolute horror at what's happened in Western North Carolina and Eastern Tennessee after the hurricane that came through there. East Tennessee State University's football team was that entire region kind of in a microcosm last Saturday. They leave Johnson City to try to get to the ball game down here in Charleston at Citadel, and they get stuck on the side of the road because there is no more road. 14 hours they spent on the side of the interstate with no cell service, no food, no water, and then finally it opened up for them. They were able to get to Charleston, and they played a heck of a good game and beat the Citadel. That's the kind of people we're talking about here, Stone. Type of people that this is not going to end them. This is going to be something that's going to make them stronger, and they're going to overcome. I think that Buccaneer football team was that entire region last weekend.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. And I think Trey Lamb post game, everybody's seen the video. And if you haven't by now, that's your fault, because what Trey Lamb showed all of us is that he's one heck of a human being. It even broke me down, and I think I'm going to put it in my top 2-3 videos that I've seen this year, just based off of the way it made me feel and the perspective it gave me. So shouts, prayers, props go out to that Buccaneer squad and everybody in that region and everybody affected in general by Helene right now.
There was other action that took place around the country last week. Let's get to it, Stone. Up first, number 2, Montana State 37, Idaho State 17. Mr. Lebanowitz, the Bengals hung around in this one a long, long time, didn't they?
They did. It was odd, and Montana State was clearly better. There are games here and there where score lines, especially in the first half, don't show it. We're going to get to a few later on. Big plays, some wacky fourth down conversions for Idaho State. You could tell this game meant something to them a little more than the others they play on Saturdays. And yeah, you walk in the locker room 17-7 at halftime, and us as the viewer, it's confusing to look at, but what we saw on the field and as far as time of possession goes, the math does add up. There was a drive there where they converted two fourth downs and then a fourth and goal. So it takes execution like that to keep a game close. But of course, the wear and tear that these guys have, it's just too much to handle.
Yeah, I just felt like the Bobcats wore the Bengals down in the end. Valiant effort by them, though. Bobcats rushed the ball for 268 yards and gained 410 total yards, and they held Idaho State to just 276. Number 8, UC Davis, 28. Number 3, Idaho, 26. Stone, this is the first of two of our upset specials from last week that hit. It was a very good week for us picking games last week.
Kev, good? Good's an understatement. I mean, we just booked our flights to Bora Bora for next summer. The amount of cash that we raked. I mean, sound the alarms. I mean, you're telling me in Timmy's first year as a head coach against the top 5 Idaho teams, some had him at the number 1 spot, and UC Davis takes him to town, hands him a loss that nobody thought they were going to have. That's the kind of stuff that you're going to get on the show each and every week. There are little details that we'll sprinkle in there in the preview segment, the pick segment, that should give you confidence. We've been high on UC Davis. We took flack for being as high as we are on UC Davis, and the Aggies beat the Vandals. Everybody went radio silent, the ones flapping gums at us all week long after our top 25 poll came out. UC Davis plus 200, take it to the bank. This game was good. This game was fun. This game had everybody hooked for all 4 quarters. There were plays, though, that stood out to me, and it's what it takes to win games like this. You watch an Idaho team strip sack your quarterback, something they've done all season long. It's how they've beaten FBS foes. You give them the ball on your own 20 after a strip sack. This is it. This is what Idaho does. This is how they beat teams. But you intercept the shot to the end zone. It's little plays like that. It's going down 14 love and answering and leveling the game. Making Idaho, making that staff, everybody on that roster think just a little bit more about who they actually are and what they have and how they stack up against a team like UC Davis. UC Davis plus 200 on the money line. We banged it. We booked it, all the above. Okay, this was massive.
Idaho dominated the stats, but the Aggies won the football game. Stone, I got the feeling that Eck was really feeling it, man. He went for it a couple of times on fourth down when points were available, and quite frankly, would have been very welcome to Vandals fans, I think. Is this just part of having Jason Eck be your head coach sometimes? He feels it a little bit, goes with the flow of the game, and that's just part and parcel of having a guy like him be your head coach. It's going to work more often than not, I think. But when it doesn't, it sure is easy to set yourself up for criticism, isn't it?
Dude, I don't think you could have said it any better. It is what you sign up for with Jason Eck. It's what Eagles fans signed up for with Nick Sirianni. There are these coaches that come along that you love and you hate, and you love Jason Eck a lot more than you hate him. But that's exactly what this was. This was him feeling himself, night game, knowing the entire country was watching, right? Everybody else's game has already struck quadruple zeros. It's Idaho's time to shine. And yeah, they got beat. They got beat. And it was a complete football game by the Aggies. But I just love what you said. I think this is exactly what happened to Jason Eck and what can happen to Jason Eck.
Number 4, North Dakota State 42. Number 17, Illinois State 10. Stone, I felt like this was complete domination from the opening whistle until the final gun here for the Bison. The Redbirds were never really in this thing after the opening kickoff, sir.
No, they weren't. And at times in last week's show, you might have thought that we were hinting towards this being a good game. No, we more so trusted the game plan that Brock Spak put in play. It just doesn't matter when you line up against the Bison. It just doesn't matter. This team's playing with this, I don't necessarily know what to call it, silent confidence. They're really good. They're really proud of what they do, and their quarterback is playing with full-blown confidence right now, and it's scary. He's had a few scares this season. ETSU, Trey Lamb. You lose to Colorado. Like, the bad things that you want out of your system are already out of their system, and I think the sky's the limit for this Bison team this year.
Quarterback Cam Miller, who Stone was just talking about, completed 20 balls for 216 yards and 2 touchdowns. The Bison defense held the Redbirds to 8. That's right, 8 rushing yards for the entire football game. Fantastic all-around effort for North Dakota State. Number 5, South Dakota 42. Number 18, Southern Illinois 13. Stone Labanowitz, I feel like I should just give you the floor on this one, sir.
Yeah, it was 28-0 pretty early on in this game. To be completely transparent, I didn't expect anything else. The South Dakota team is really good and really experienced, and this Southern Illinois team is not, and their quarterback is definitely not. This is kind of what happens when you go on the road in the Valley against a team with veterans, right? You get your butt kicked, and they got their butt kicked. South Dakota's a really good football team, Kev. Top 5 bona fide.
Northern Arizona, 34, number 11, Sac State, 16. This is the second of our upset specials from last week to hit. And Stone, in this one, the NAU defense was just outstanding, dude. Sac State had 231 total yards and were 3 of 13 on third down. NAU got off the field on third down, and they were better in the red zone than they were the week before. That's why they won the football game.
Kev, I was already loud. I already sounded the alarms. UC Davis over Idaho. This one's you. Keep this thing a rolling here. What the boys up north did to the Sac State team that a lot of people were high on, considering us, was jarring to a lot of people, not us. Kev, you called this one. You had this one pegged, and this game wasn't even close.
Lumberjacks quarterback Ty Pennington completed 22 passes for 275 yards and 2 touchdowns. And Stone, the last 3 ranked teams to come into the walk-up Sky Dome there in Flagstaff, Arizona, guess what's happened to them? They got beat. And here is the FCS Nation Radio Top 25 for Week 5. Number 1, South Dakota State. Number 2, Montana State. Number 3, North Dakota State. Number 4, South Dakota. Rounding out the top 5, Central Arkansas. Rising to number 6, UC Davis. Number 7, North Dakota. Rising to number 8, Montana. Falling to number 9, Idaho. And cracking the top 10 for the first time this year, the Mercer Bears. Number 11, Villanova. Number 12, Tarleton State. Rising to number 13, the East Tennessee State Buccaneers. Number 14, William & Mary. Number 15 is SEMO. 16, Rhode Island. Number 17, Incarnate Word. Cracking the poll at number 18, Northern Arizona. Falling to number 19, Sacramento State. And rounding out the top 20, Illinois State. Number 21, Wofford. Number 22, McNeese. Falling to number 23, Southern Illinois. And getting back in the poll this week after a big win at number 24, the Richmond Spiders. And rounding out the top 25, the Western Carolina Catamount. And here are the FCS Nation Radio National Offensive and Defensive Players of the Week, brought to you by Northwestern Mutual. The National Offensive Player of the Week is Logan Fife, quarterback, Montana. Last week versus Eastern Washington, 30 of 42 for 364 yards and 5 touchdowns. His QB rating, 183.5. Stone, is that perfect?
Perfect's not the word, Kev. Ridiculous is, though.
The National Defensive Player of the Week is Theron Gaines, defensive lineman from Tennessee Tech. Last week versus Gardner-Webb, 7 tackles, 3.5 tackles for a loss, 3 sacks, and 1 forced fumble. Have a day, young man. Congratulations to Logan Fife and Theron Gaines for being the National Offensive and Defensive Players of the Week for FCS Nation, brought to you by Northwestern Mutual. It's time for us to take a quick break. We'll be right back. You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network.
Thanks for sticking with us during the break. You were listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network. Back at it again with another dissection of another top 10 team. A few weeks ago, the Idaho Vandals. This week, North Dakota, the Fighting Hawks out of Grand Forks. Here to break it all down, joining me, Kelly Howe, creator, Kelly Spearheads, UND Football 360. Popped up shop 14 years ago. You can follow them, and please do, at UND Football 360. Kelly, thanks so much for hopping on. I think you guys are worthy of a long conversation.
No, I appreciate you reaching out. You and Kevin, you guys all do a great job and promoting FCS, promoting, you know, just a small guy. We don't feel like it, but that's what we really are. And, you know, we're all in it together. And I love coming on, love listening to your show. You guys do a great job.
You kind of opened the door for me there to be transparent with you and say that a lot of the things that I use when breaking down UND football games or when I'm talking North Dakota football, I just steal it all from your guys' show. So we're all doing it for the little man. So you heard it here first. At least. So next time, next week, when you hear something about UND, whether we're recapping a game or previewing a game, and you're like, that sounds familiar. Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
All right. Well, hey, that's what we're here for, right?
Yeah, damn right. Damn right. Kelly Howe, again, having a long chat with me because I think the Fighting Hawks are worthy of it. And before we really get things rolling, I want to get something off my chest. Kelly, 72 points. Punched Murray State square in the mouth. Haven't seen 72 on a scoreboard in a long time in an FCS matchup. What the hell is that?
Well, it was one of those games, and it was a hair under 3 or 4 hours the game lasted, and there was a defensive touchdown, there was a punt block, there was a fumbled punt return by and all deep in their end. So, you know, people said 72, and some people were acting like we ran it up. Well, it really wasn't. I mean, it was all those things I just mentioned, and it just got away, and they were all, so there was a bunch of short drives, bunch of quick touchdowns all together, and then Murray would score two, though. So they had 35 points. So, you know, it's like, you know, we've seen UND get come back on in the past. You know, we were in no position to take our foot off the gas. You know, we're not that good, you know, so it's like, well, and it ended up with 72. But yeah, it was just a wild game. Like I said, almost 4 hours, and it was exhausting. When people left there, they were tired.
My first reaction, like, is Bubba really getting that old and getting grumpy? He doesn't care. Like, he just could give a damn at this point. 72 points, Murray State. Of course, we're going to get to the North Dakota State game this weekend, folks. But seriously, I'm so hung up on dropping 72 on Murray State. 600 plus yards of offense in the game. 309 on the ground, 300 through the air. Bo Bellquist doing what Bo Bellquist does best. Some stats that I pulled that obviously you know, but just for the audience out there listening, I just want you to kind of stop and let these be as jarring to you as they are to me. 72 points were the most points scored by North Dakota since scoring 80 in Jamestown in 1928. That doesn't even count. 1928. It was the most points scored by UND ever in one of the hardest stadiums and venues to play in all the FCS for a reason that I don't know, Kelly, but hopefully you do, because I'm going to ask you. Second stat I pulled, my favorite of them all, the 72 points were also just 1 point shy of the Missouri Valley record for most points by a Valley team to put up in a conference game. The record held by the Southern Illinois Salukis with 73 against Missouri State in 2015. I read that stat and I immediately texted my head coach, Nick Hill. And I was like, who was behind center in 2015? And I got all that answer. Again, something that was so jarring to me, going dating all the way back to 1928 and also Southern Illinois doing it in 2015 and me not knowing that and ending up showing up on campus 3 years later. To dive a little deeper into this thing, I want to talk about Isaac Frickte, Kelly, offensive coordinator, coach assignment, and the quarterbacks a really short and brief question. Answer it how you may. Is he the guy who deserves all the credit?
Well, knowing him, he's about the most humble person I've met in coaching. Coaches typically aren't super humble. He is, and he's on it, but he is very intelligent. He's very down to earth. And another thing is, you would know, you know, with offensive coordinators, they got to be quick on their feet. And as the game's going on, they got to adjust. They got to diagnose, hey, you know, what's going on here? What isn't working? I think that's what he is very good at, is understanding what UND can do and then figuring out what the other team's doing in about two drives, let's say. Two drives or so, you can see UND's offense change quickly. They all of a sudden abandon something and they go back to another. I think they're throwing deep one game. The next game, they're throwing short constantly. And he has a real sense, you know, and I'm sure you've been around many offensive coordinators, so you can, you know, the ones that can pick it up and the ones that can adjust on the fly. And that's his thing. And yeah, I think he's instilled a different mentality that has no variations to it. And when I say that, I mean, I use the word intentional today. They're very intentional about what they're doing. And there isn't an option B. We're going to run up the middle. We're going to run zone at you. And we're going to take some shots. And there's going to be no trick plays in there. And that's it. That's all we're going to do. And everything is just, it's like the players understand that. So they're not waiting for anything else to come through. They're not waiting for the flea flicker or the reverse or the, you know, they just know this is all we're going to do today. What we put in is what we're going to do.
Yeah.
But he's going to figure it out, you know.
I think it's hard to tell watching them how good they actually are. I think it's their biggest weapon, how dangerous they actually are and how deceiving it is, because to the eyes, nobody scares you. That team getting off the bus doesn't win games by just getting off of the bus. Or maybe they do, because like I said, it's so deceiving to the point where you just don't even take them seriously. And it's halftime and you're jogging in, you sit down by some locker and you're down 17 points. You kind of touched on it, but I want you to dive a little deeper. Why does it seem like schematically they're better than every single team they play? Just every single team each and every Saturday, schematically, they're better than them. Why does it look like that?
Well, I know up front, one thing they like to give credit to is Trevor Olson, O-line coach. He was at Southern Illinois. I don't know. Was he there when you were there?
Yes, he was.
Yeah. See. So, and I don't know him. I've never spoken to him yet, which I'm kind of ashamed of. I've talked to Isaac plenty of times.
You should be. He's a phenomenal guy.
Is he? Okay.
Yes. Minnesota guy. Trevor Olson, you just said that, and I'm just visualizing big, brawny man, very smart. One of the guys who's, wow, he's going to hear this, so I got to be careful. He's one of those guys who's better. It's almost disrespectful. I'm trying to not make it sound disrespectful because it's one of the biggest compliments I think I can give. But he's one of the guys who knows football better than he knows life. He's more socially aware with X's and O's than he is having a conversation, getting a coffee. He's one of those brilliant football minds. And I think obviously you can tell by just watching these guys perform.
Right. And that's what I'm hearing. It's like they were talking about him. They brought up that when you guys went to the Wildcat there with, who was it? Javon
Williams. Yep.
Yeah. When you guys went to that, and I think it was NDSU couldn't stop it that one year in the spring or whenever it was. And
42-3.
And yeah, when he couldn't, and he was somewhat credited. You would know more than me, but they said he was part of that, you know, part
absolutely.
Of that package, coming up with some, you know, some blocking schemes up front, that type of thing. And they've made a point to say, you know, he's really good with that stuff, like just coming up with the duos and all that. You know, you would know more. But once again, I just hear mumbo jumbo for O-line and I go
right on the money.
But yeah, you know, that type of stuff. He's real good at combinations up front. And we see it now. You know, they don't do crazy stuff, but he's good with it. And I think, you know, Fricke, they came together from Winona State. So they've coached together. And I think they're all on the same page. And it's fun. All right, Grant, now it's fun to watch because they're more than happy to get 3 yards, 3 yards, three yards. And then it's third and three and they'll get it. And like Bobby Houck said after the game, he goes, well, they're doing the 3 times 4 equals 12. That's how they're running their offense. They just kept pounding at us and pounding it at us and we couldn't stop it. You know, 8 minute drives are not crazy for us.
Watching the offense, it seems like every other play, Simon or whoever's behind center in whatever year we're talking about, is getting outside the hashes, is some way or another on the move. And yeah, they're content. If it's a 3-yard throw to the flat, they're happy with that. Not only is it a completion, but we gained 3 yards. It just seems like, in my opinion, just laser focused for 4 quarters. And that's an impossible task for any football team, whether it's led by Bear Bryant, Nick Saban, or whoever's name you want to throw out there. Just laser focused for 4 quarters. I credit that to Bubba, Trevor, the rest of the staff, Fritti, especially because it's a really hard game plan to scheme up. Their openers, I'm sure, are really wicked. The first 15 plays that are scripted are probably just really, really complicated. But of course, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, you spend kind of ironing it out, and they execute it so well. This team's ridiculously good. And like I said, getting off the bus, you'd be like, what's going on? This is
right.
Not the team that scored 72 last week, but they are. And one of those guys who deserves a lot of the credit, Bo Bellquist. I think he's one of my favorite players in the FCS. And I said this on our show last week. There's a chance that he's a top 3 player in the FCS and people don't even know who he is. And it sucks because he plays in the Valley. It sucks because he's not going to pop off the screen. He's not one of the 4'3", 4'4" guys. He's not 6'5", but he does everything so well. And I remember vividly my former head coach, Nick Hill, when bringing up Bo Bellquist on that Sunday, Monday morning scouting report meeting with the entire team. And instead of showing us the 4 key players and everybody rostered, it was a picture of this white kid who took up our entire screen. And Nick Hill spent 5 to 10 minutes talking about him. And when breaking Bo down, was saying, what I just described about this kid goes for every single player on that team. And that's how they're coached. And that's how they play football. When you hear that coming from an outsider's perspective, your in-house, does that surprise you or no? It all that math adds up.
Well, not terribly, because yeah, that's kind of the way UND has to do it. It all has to work together. I mean, you've seen them. You mentioned, you know, coming off the bus. I call it the 50-yard line test. I'll be standing out there at the game and I'll look left and I'll look right. And we lose more than we win. Okay. Cause I just take a quick look and then I look over and I'm like, ugh, you know, we beat Drake, you know, stuff like that. But then Southern Illinois shows up. It's like, nope. We don't look better. Northern Iowa. Nope. We don't look at it. It's just like, you know, you look at these guys, you're like, holy God, the defensive linemen and stuff that these teams have. We don't have those. Look at ours. You know, ours are 230, 240, you know? And just not, but yeah, it's a sum of the part. And like you, I think that's pretty much what you're getting at. They have to have a sum of the parts. They all got to be on the same page. That's why, like, our defensive coordinators, I know over the past X number of years, they spend day and night, you know, Sunday through Wednesday, pouring through every check, everything you could possibly run at them, have everything covered up, and they can't sleep. I mean, they spend, just because they know we can't, you know, this isn't Alabama. We can't go 4 down, 1 high all game, which is what Alabama's doing now, I was told the other day. They, you know, and you probably know that better. I mean, most of the team, they just go 1 high and turn it loose. All right. Four up front, get pressure.
Because you like your guys better than their guys. It's as simple as that a lot of the times. And that's how coaches see it.
UND did not do that. They have a call for everything, a check for everything. And Bo Bellquist is the epitome of that. He goes out there and every play is like his last. He is going hard, blocking, running routes. He was carving guys up this year. He had 3 for 121 and 2 touchdowns. Mm-hmm. So he's the big threat now. Before, he was the intermediate guy. Now he's the deep threat, because he's carving them up on the top of those routes. He's getting up on them and he'll twist, he'll spin you into the ground. And that, I think that's kind of what you're getting at. I mean, he's turned into a legit FCS player.
Absolutely. I love the way you kept that off. I do want to ask your honest opinion. Is this the same team without Bo? My answer is no, I don't think so.
No, they would have trouble downfield. Yeah, I mean, the other guys are decent players. They're not there yet. They'll be good when Bo leaves. I think Caden Dennis, Nate DeMontenac, they got speed to them. They can run, but they're not ready, I think, yet. And Bo is, you know, deservedly so, taking the number one spot. So he's getting the looks. And Isaac Fricke told us today, he goes, I come from the school of, he goes, I coached at D3. The D3, I had to take over as the OC. Here's the story. 3 weeks into the year, our guy got fired, something. He goes, I was a GA. He goes, now I'm the offensive coordinator. The guy told me, don't screw it up. Get it to Speaker, I think the kid's name was. Get it to Speaker. So he said, that's all I did. I kept calling plays to get it to my best player. He goes, that's what I'm doing now. He goes, if I have to throw it to Bo 14 times in one half, he goes, I'm going to throw it to Bo 14 times. And that's just, he just keeps it simple and he is not messing around.
Phenomenal. And Bo starting to attract all the attention from defenses, and most definitely going to get some attention from the secondary that lives in Fargo, who plays their Saturdays in the Fargo Dome. Obviously, a big time matchup top 10 matchup, North Dakota State hosting North Dakota. North Dakota actually holds the 63-50 lead in the series. This is my favorite stat ever in this entire interview. In games played in Fargo, the series is tied 28-28-1. Going back to 1894, tying it for the eighth oldest college football rivalry. It's ridiculous. Do you think the records that I just rattled off play into this game at all? Is there a different feel to it? Of course, the Dakotas play the Dakotas. Seems like all the time, especially if you're not a fan of the Valley. You're like, oh, it's just another Dakota team, right? Just another Dakota team playing another Dakota team. But does it feel a little different when the Fighting Hawks play the Bison?
Oh, it's different. Oh, yeah. We actually cut our show same day you do yours. And so a lot of this is fresh in my mind. The two fan base, like, I think it was Frickty. He was on our show. He brought up Iowa, Minnesota. Hey, you know, there's a rivalry there, right? But it's not, you know, I don't know. It's a rivalry. He said he's starting to figure out that this is like a real deep-seated hatred, like in the the two sides. No, there's no middle ground. It's like, hey, okay, we lost. Well, we'll cheer for you the rest of your. No, it's like there's no at any time. There's no ifs, ands, or what. We do not like each other, and it's so I don't think the history of the on-field plays much since the D1 move. In D2 it did 100%. Yeah, I mean it was every year, and you know you could kind of go up and down with it, ebbs and flows, but now it's just different. I think it'll get there, but they need a few more years of this consistent play. But you know, last year the 49-24 win by UND up in Grand Fork, I think that ignited this thing that now it's on.
I would
again. Agree. Yep. The fans were, you know, the Bison fans weren't, you know, too interested, worried about UND, which they didn't need to be. I mean, they were just better than us for 10, 15 years, you know. And now after that, it seems like now there's a little more talk, chatter, animosity because they realize it's a game again now. And so, yeah, everyone, it's been fun this week. But I don't think these players, I don't think the path means anything to them, but I think the last 3 years do. Because UND almost beat them in 21 up there. It was, they were up 9-7, I think, in the third. End up losing 16-10, I think it was. And that was one that killed them. It hurt pretty bad because they outplayed NDSU for a good part of the game and then ended up losing it, which credit to NDSU. But then last year, they finally got it back. And now I think it's on again. And the whole state is starting to ramp up again, realizing this thing is going to be an every year rivalry.
I love it. In my opinion, Kelly, I think this game tells everybody, whether you're deep into the weeds, whether you're an outsider, whether you're a casual, whatever the case may be, I think this game right here, Saturday, I believe 2:30 kick, tells us everything we need to know about who North Dakota is. Would you say that we're okay putting all of our eggs into this game's basket to make that determination?
Well, yeah, it's a good point. Yes, because of, you know, UND's had some flameouts early in the playoffs. So people are still kind of wondering, you know, what are they, you know, how good are they really? They keep losing, you know, that type of thing. But the Fargo Dome's hard to win it. You know, it's very hard to win in there. Yeah. And it's especially hard to win for UND lately. I mean, UND, what people don't know is it, when it opened in 1993, okay, the Fargo Dome. Okay, so 94 was the first game that UND played down there. Well, UND won 94, 96, 98, and 2002. So they went 4-1 in the D1 era in the... So they go down there and win every year in the D2 era, and then it's switched to D1, and then it's got fired up again, and they couldn't quite, you know, pull it off again, I guess you could say.
That just about sums it up. I mean, running out of things to describe what this game's mean, just I'd imagine everything running through your head as far as both fan bases, and you talked about a deep hatred. So I can only imagine something Bubba talked about in his presser leading up to this game. 9 out of the 11, I think this was the stat that he pulled, 9 out of the 11 starters on defense are either junior or seniors. That in itself is ridiculous, and that is by design. It's typically why they're so good. These aren't household names in the trenches for these guys. Maybe a guy like Cody is. 9 out of 11 guys on the defensive side that are juniors or seniors. More than half of them, I'd imagine, are actually graduated from college. The Bison, okay. 5 sacks last week against the Redbirds of Illinois State. Just holding them to 8 yards rushing. Is that something that is being spoken about in this locker room and that they're going to take into account by the time they step inside those white lines?
Oh yeah, it's they got a veteran unit. I know those guys. Yeah, it's they stepped up. They had trouble. It looked like East Tennessee State gave up some long runs. Gave up 270 against them. They gave up 205 against Towson, and then last week stepped up with the eight rushing yards. You know, to Illinois State, which I know Illinois State was down a few O linemen, so they were struggling a little bit. But yeah, I think that got them back on track again. Yeah, they shouldn't have been giving up that many yards with those type of players that you were talking about. I mean, they do got those line that. Linebacker crew is a veteran unit. The D-line's a veteran unit. They got a couple of young guys in the secondary. You know, I think there's chances, let's say, for Bo Belkwis downfield in this one, you know, versus that secondary. But yeah, I mean, it's with the two tackles too on the other side of the ball. Yeah, they're better. I think last year might have been, you know, geez, what'd they make? They still made the semifinals. It was like, you know, we were talking about down by his year is making the semifinals.
Yeah. Right. And losing by, I don't remember, was it the last play of the game, Junior Bergen, is literally came out of the last play of a semifinal. So you're confident saying the game plan is the same game plan they've used every single week starting in September? Pound the rock.
I think so. Yeah, that's all they know. Like, like I said earlier, he's instilled one mentality. And I think, you know, there's deviations off that mentality if it's not working, but it's still all the same mentality. You're still moving forward, slowly burning, you know, a slow burn. Just move forward, nothing flashy. And I think that's, you know, what last year's game plan, which I have said this on our show ad nauseum, I kind of got a gist of what they were going to do and what, if you remember, South Dakota went in there and beat them last year and into the Fargo Dome. And they went with the run between the tackles, only run between the tackles, throw it to the flat, see if they can tackle in space, and don't drop back pass. You do not drop back. That's the only, they eliminated. So UND went with that. They saw it and they're like, hey, all right. You know, UND knew they couldn't drop back. You don't want to drop back pass against the Tampa too, because they're just going to turn the four loose, you know, and you know that, you know, playing quarterback, you don't want to sit back there for 4 or 5 seconds because they're sitting deep. They're begging you to throw downfield, you know, but you can't get behind them. So it's like, so then by that time, the four up front get to you. You know, and so it's a nasty thing that you can get into if you don't have the right game plan. Well, UND last year said, all right, we're going to run between the guards only. That's pretty much all they did. They ran a gap and threw bubble screens and took one shot down the sideline. And that was, it was just over and over the same thing. RPO, quick RPOs to the flats.
Oh my God.
Quick, you know?
I do. Kelly, your confidence level heading into Saturday.
Oh, boy, it's going to be hard. I mean, it's going to be, UND can win, but they're going to need, like last year, they blocked a punt. They're going to need something like that. I mean, it's just, like you said, a sum of the part, like we talked about earlier. They have to do the extra step. They can't man for man, I don't think, beat them. You know, just, hey, we played straight up. We didn't force the turnover. You didn't turn it on. You know, no, nothing happened really crazy. We win. Nah, I think some crazy stuff, you know, they're going to have to get an interception. You know, do that kind of stuff. Don't turn it over. Maybe block a punt, maybe return a punt deep into their line, you know, then we all of a sudden we get an easy touchdown. Stuff like that, you know, is what I'm envisioning has to happen just because it's so hard. You know that play. I mean, it's hard to win there.
Oh my God. Yeah. And I actually couldn't agree more. I think UND has to be up 3-0 into the second quarter, North Dakota driving and scores a pick six, right? Blocks a punt, scoops and scores it, finds themselves up 10-0, right? Then you can kind of try to win the time of possession battle. You're right. It's going to take something weird. As we wrap things up, Kelly, a question that I've died to get an opportunity to ask anybody around this North Dakota Fighting Hawks football team. Is it ever weird? And this has a lot to do with what you called the 58-yard line test and what I call getting off the bus. Is it ever weird when you see North Dakota ranked 7th in the country, 6th in the country, whatever it is? Is it ever like weird or I don't necessarily know. Does it work to their advantage? Is it a disadvantage? How do you see it? Because for me, it's surprising until I watch and I'm like, it makes sense. Like, it makes sense. It's annoying, but it makes sense.
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, the Montana win will do that for you. You know, it'll vault you up pretty quick because they were like unranked or 23 or 24 before they beat Montana. Then all of a sudden, some people had them at 5, 6. I'm like, whoa, hold on here now. You know, I mean, Montana kind of fell apart there in the second half. And, you know, if it was out in Missoula, it would have been a different story, I'm sure. But yeah, in my opinion, they're a little high. Yeah, I mean, based on the resume so far, the other three wins aren't that great. So if they were 10, 12, I'd be fine with that too. You know, earn your your way up, earn your way up the ladder. Now you beat Indy a few. Okay. You know, now you could
sure.
be 5-6.
You got it.
Yep. But yeah, you know, I hear you. It's a good point. I do think that they vaulted them up a little too quick on that Montana win, but they are also playing well and scoring points. So we'll see. We'll see this weekend. This weekend will tell us a lot about whether they should be 6-7 or they should be, you know, 10-12, something like that.
Awesome stuff. Having a chat here with the man, the creator of UND Football 360, Mr. Kelly Howe. Kelly, wrap this thing up by giving me, in your opinion, their realistic goals and what they should be come November, December, and I'll put quotes around January.
Well, they should. They got to win that opening round is the thing. There's no reason they shouldn't, you know, win an opening round game for sure. They've lost, oh boy, the last three, I believe it is, opening round FCS playoff games. And, you know, they won 2016. They came back where they were a seed and feeling good 9-2 and then blew a huge lead against Richmond at home and lost. Now that one hurt. I mean, because they had that game and they outplayed Richmond and then it all just fell apart. But anyway, they got to get that first win. You know, this team, there's no reason the way these guys are playing and the way they're set up, like we've talked about with the run first mentality, that should transfer. I don't know. So you can tell me, but that should transfer to the playoffs. That should, you know, when they get somebody who's not used to that kind of thing in the first round, you know, you get your Southland team, you get your whatever, you know, somebody that doesn't want to play yeah. that way. I don't know. You know, they should be able to get a win.
Yeah. I think somebody who's not familiar with Valley football, that's what they need in the first round this year to get that thing done. And then I think the monkey's kind of off your back and the sky's the limit for these guys, especially with what Frick D can cook up. Again, thank you to Kelly Howe, UND Football 360. Follow them on Twitter, please, at UND Football 360. Kelly, I'm so excited for the matchup against North Dakota State. I'm going to be watching it from start to finish as soon as that kickoff takes flight. I'm locked in and I'll probably be bugging you, asking you questions. What the hell was that? Who is that? Some stuff like that. So be on the lookout for that. But seriously, Kelly, thanks so much for joining the show this week.
Hey, appreciate you having me on. You guys do a great job.
That right there was Kelly Howe. When you come back, as always, the third segment of the show. It's the preview segment. You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network.
And we're back. You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network. I'm Kevin, he's Stone, and this is the preview segment where we take a trip all over FCS Nation and preview the biggest games taking place this week in FCS football. Up first, number one, South Dakota State is at Northern Iowa. Stone, it's extremely weird to not say a rank before Northern Iowa, isn't it?
Oh my God.
It seems like they're always ranked. They're always in the weeds. And this is about the time where they start to try to make up for overscheduling at a conference. But they're doing something a little different this year, trying to throw the ball more. And this has always been a team that has been a thorn in the Jackrabbits' paw, that's for sure.
Yeah, two things. Typically, when we talk about Northern Iowa, yes, there's a ranking in front of it. And also, when you're talking about Northern Iowa's matchup with South Dakota State, they typically are a thorn. These are good games. This one, I feel quite the opposite about. I think this is Amar Johnson's game. I think he goes for 100-plus yards on the ground, finds himself in the end zone twice at least. This is a game where you got to get one of your playmakers going. We've talked about this offense just spinning tires for a month now. If there's one guy on that roster to get him out of a rut, it's number three.
I feel like that after this week, people are going to stop asking what's wrong with South Dakota State. I think the bye week is going to have done them well. We're going to see those timing things that are just a smidgen off that haven't been there so far this year. I expect the Jackrabbits to really have their stuff in a pile at Northern Iowa. Northern Colorado is at number two, Montana State. So Northern Colorado, they have looked much better this season. They have nothing to show for it. Haven't won a ball game. Don't expect them to go to Bozeman and win, but the effort is there. There's more talent on that Northern Colorado team. They're just about to run into a buzzsaw. The number two Montana State Bobcats, that offensive line, that rushing game, Tommy Mellott, just go on and on about their players, who they have and who Northern Colorado doesn't. I expect this one to get out of hand pretty early.
It's going to get out of hand. Yeah, the Colorado boys need just a few more years to get things right. Once they dial it in, yes, I think they're dangerous, and yes, they have the talent, but this is going to be one of those weeks. I feel like we haven't had to recap Montana State games seriously this year or preview Montana State games seriously at all this season. And I don't think we're going to after this. Montana State, I said this in the week zero episode, the week one, two, three, four, five. And now as we head into week six right here, right now, I think this team is the team to beat in the subdivision, and they're going to beat up on Northern Colorado pretty badly.
Number seven, North Dakota is at number three, North Dakota State. Little revenge factor here for the Bison. They get North Dakota in their place where they're not nearly as good as they are at the Alaris Center in Grand Forks. Nobody is as good in the Fargo Dome as they are on their home field. That's been a trend for a long time with North Dakota State football. I don't know what to expect from this one because, yes, North Dakota is ranked number seven, but are they really the seventh best team in the country? We're about to find out. They may be better than that. They may be highly overranked. We're going to find out a lot about the UND Fighting Hawks this week. I think we know who North Dakota State is so far. Good quarterback, good defense. Things seem to be rounding into shape for the Bison right now, Stone.
Yeah, I'm so nervous for Fighting Hawks players and fans. I feel like us on the outside looking into this program, we give them one chance a year. They play well for a stretch, at least one part of the season where we all go, yeah, this North Dakota team is really good. They have everybody on the tip of their finger right now. This team should not be ranked at number seven, but they leave us no choice. Huge win over Hauk and his squad. But I fear for them because this is the game where everybody turns their head the other way. You have our attention. But if you get beat up pretty badly, and that I think happens, this is monumental. Call it a Super Bowl in week six, whatever it is. I think North Dakota needs to come prepared because this one holds a lot of weight.
Number four, South Dakota is at Murray State. I don't expect the Yotes to have too many problems on the road at Murray State, although it is hard to win on the road. We all know that. But good running game, play action pass, and a good defense travel. I expect that to travel from Vermillion to Kentucky, sir.
I do as well. And quick little callback here. I talked about that North Dakota team shouldn't be ranked where they are. Well, what did they do last week, Kev? They cracked Murray State upside the head, dropped 72 points on them, over 600 yards of total offense. And if North Dakota is doing that to Murray State, what do you think South Dakota is going to do to Murray State? This one's going to be ugly. And hey, Kev, we've been calling for it. We're begging for it. Aiden Bauman, do it. Do the damn thing. Uncork it. 25 completions on 34 attempts, 300 plus yards, 2-3 touchdowns. We need it. We're begging for it. Your team needs it.
Number five, Central Arkansas is at others receiving votes. Abilene Christian. Stone, I have not been on the Abilene Christian bandwagon. There are people who have them ranked as high as like 15th this week. They're not even in our poll. They're getting a vote or two. I don't think this is a very good football team. Their quarterback is very good, but they have struggled with some teams that are not good at all. And Central Arkansas, they've been laying the smack down on everybody, and I expect that to continue. There's just too much on both sides of the ball, I believe, here. Quarterback can spin it, probably the best edge rusher in FCS, and they also have two of the best running backs in the FCS. And I expect Central Arkansas to do something very unchristian to Abilene Christian on Saturday, sir.
Kevin, not only am I laughing at that, I'm laughing at the fact that there are people that have this team ranked as the 15th best team in the country. I don't think there's a conversation to be had about Abilene Christian. I think there's plenty of conversations to be had in Conway about the Central Arkansas team. You already rattled off some of their key guys, but there's one thing that they haven't done this season that I hope and pray that they do in this spot against Abilene Christian. And I think there's a chance it happens because Abilene Christian's not a team going into it that you feel much pressure playing. And what Central Arkansas hasn't done this season, not once, is started out the game hot, scored on consecutive drives out the game.
Absolutely correct. Come out hot, fast, and take the other team's home crowd out of it. They haven't done that. They let people hang around, and that could come back to bite them. You're absolutely correct, Stone.
Right on. And I know we have UC Davis right after this, but one more thing I want to add. You can take the training wheels off of the statements you made about David Walker. You said there's an edge rusher that is probably one of the best players in the FCS. Listen, he's one of the best edge rushers in college football, David Walker. He wears the number 8. If you haven't tuned in, all the stars are on the offensive side. They put up a lot of points. David Walker is, in my opinion, the best player in the FCS and one of the best edge rushers in all of college football, regardless.
Number six, UC Davis is at Portland State. Folks, we're going to find out this week if UC Davis can stand Prosperity. They did a thing last week. It was a major thing. It was the first time they've ever beaten a top five team. Guess what that means this week? Not a darn thing. You got to go on the road to Portland State, kind of create your own environment there. And like I said, we'll see if they can stand Prosperity. I believe they can.
Yeah, awkward spot. Very awkward spot for the Aggies. first win of that magnitude in program history. Yeah, this is the definition of a hangover spot. I just think this UC Davis team is too good. And I think what they can do defensively and what they're capable of on offense week by week, they're obviously going to be way too much for Portland State. But yeah, this is an awkward spot on paper.
Weber State is at number 8, Montana. This one is usually an intriguing matchup, Stone. Weber State doesn't look to have the squad again this year that they've had in previous years before the last two. I think this may be a trend for the Wildcats. They are trending down as a program, but I bet they score a whole bunch of points against Montana because that defense doesn't look like it can stop anybody, Stone. They've given up close to 100 points the last 2 weeks, right? Got to get off the field at some point. You're not going to be able to continue to play these type of games if you're Montana because you're going to run up against some people that can play defense against you, and you're not going to be able to win 52-49. I don't know if this is the week. Weber State's usually pretty good on defense, above average in the Big Sky, maybe top 2 or 3 in the Big Sky each year. This could be that week where they run into somebody who can stop them and can score just enough. I'm not sure if it is, but this is going to be a sneaky good game, I think.
The only thing I'll add here, Kev, is if Weber State scores 30 or more points, I am officially sounding the alarms in Missoula. They got bigger problems.
Number 18, Northern Arizona is at number 9, Idaho. Hey, congratulations on your big victory last week, Northern Arizona. Now you get rewarded to a trip to the Kibbe Dome to take on an Idaho team that's all pissed off and upset that they got beat last week. Not a good spot for the Lumberjacks, I fear, Mr. Labanowitz.
Yeah, what I just said about UC Davis and the spot that they're in on paper, crumble that piece of paper up and throw it in the garbage. Idaho's in the complete opposite spot. Northern Arizona is in the complete opposite spot of where they want to be. Again, on paper. Idaho, here's the thing. The mistakes they made last week are so fixable. And they can be fixed in half an hour of breaking down some of that tape. There were wonky plays in that Aggies-Vandals game. That's what it took for UC Davis to win. If those wonky plays don't happen and Eck puts on a pair of pants, yeah, they'll win this game and they're going to win it by double digits and that defense is going to show up like they have each and every week.
Number 11, Villanova is at Stony Brook. It's a nice story what Billy Kosh has done with Stony Brook. Not a good football team last year. He's got the Seawolves believing and they have a very good football team in number 11, Villanova, coming to their place. This one, Stone, could get tricky for the Wildcats.
I think so too. And it's probably jarring hearing that because we're talking about Stony Brook, but Villanova's been susceptible to a lot. And it seems like they're ice skating for, I don't know, the 5th time in their life. Yeah, they can stay upright and they're quote-unquote experienced, but they can't go full speed and they're not confident doing it. I think this is a spot where Stony Brook can go into the locker room down a touchdown here and make things awkward. Villanova, in my opinion, just straight up isn't losing this game, but we'll see. Of course, Villanova is going to be favored by a lot, but can they live up to it? And again, similar to how I talk about Aiden Bauman in South Dakota, we need that game from Connor Watkins. We have not seen it, and I think his team, most importantly, needs it right now.
Defense has carried Villanova, which I don't think anybody thought was going to be the case coming into the season. We thought they'd light up the scoreboard. Hasn't happened. They're playing a different sort of a ball at Villanova this season. Number 12, Tarleton State is at Southern Utah. This is another one where Tarleton State's going to come in favored in this ball game. Southern Utah is going to have a little something for them, Stone, and they're pretty tough to beat at home. I think this is a dogfight for Tarleton State this week on the road at Southern Utah. I really do.
Is this low-key a dogfight? Kev, I think you're hot right now. Listen, there's going to be a lot of points scored in this game for the degenerates out there. Take the over. I think you're right. I think Southern Utah is going to push Tarleton State up against the wall at some point during this game, but on paper, I mentioned it for 2-3 games now in the preview segment. Whether it's a spot you really hate to be in or a spot you love to be in, I'd consider this one a spot you love to be in. This is a get-back spot. They want their lick back, and I think Tarleton State explodes for 40-plus, but the problem is keeping Southern Utah under that 30-point mark. It's going to be the question, Kevin. It's going to be fun to find out.
Others receiving votes, Chattanooga is at number 13, East Tennessee State. I hope that the people of this region are going to be able to rally around this Buccaneer football team like they did last week, Hack Green Stadium, because this is a rivalry football game, and Chattanooga had them ranked in the top 15 to start the year, maybe the top 10. It's been 6 weeks ago. I kind of forget, and they all run together, especially, you know, when I've been incorrect about it. If Chattanooga was 5-0, boy, you'd never hear the end of me talking about how right I was, right? But it's still a good football team. They have an opportunity here to get a top 25 win, a road win in the Southern Conference, and they've already lost to Mercer. but they need to keep putting up W's in the league. The same thing for East Tennessee State. I saw this East Tennessee State team with my own two eyes last week from the sidelines at Johnson A. Goode Stadium. This is a good football team. They do a lot of things well. They have a huge offensive line that works together and can run the football. I expect Trey Lamb to have a same game plan he's had. Run the ball, play defense, big plays over the top. Should be a whale of a game in Johnson City, Tennessee.
Hey, this one's a banger, not just for SoCon fans and SoCon stands. This one's a banger in general. I'm excited for this one. And I don't want to speak in hyperbole, but I think this East Tennessee State team's playing with destiny. Got a little bit of magic on their side. And I think when teams go through something like they went through this past month, it brings you so much closer together. It's, I don't know, call it science. There's just a different kind of air in that facility each and every day, I'd imagine, right now. And this team's going to play inspired football, and they'll beat Chattanooga.
Number 14, William & Mary is at Towson. This one I have circled for William & Mary as a game that they really don't need at this point in the season right now. Towson's been very close against ranked Villanova. They went to the Fargo Dome and were in the ball game in the fourth quarter. And, you know, you felt like maybe if they could have split those two, their season would be different. But they have William & Mary at home and an opportunity to really throw a monkey wrench in this race for the CAA paper championship, since they don't all play each other. How can you crown an actual champion for an automatic bid? But that's a topic for another show. But Towson has a real opportunity here to mess that league completely up, and I wouldn't be shocked if they did it.
Yeah, I think this one means a lot for you, Kev. The roller coaster ride that you've been on with the Tribe, it's found its way all the way up until this point in the season, and this is a game where could lose to Towson, or they could play really well. We just really don't know what to expect, so I'm excited to find out as well.
Number 15, SEMO is at Eastern Illinois. Paxton DeLaurent, his show, his team. That's really all you have to say with SEMO. They're going to go as Paxton DeLaurent goes, right, Stone?
Obviously, they sit at number 15. I think this is the top 8 team in the country. I was bullish on them in the week zero episode where we talked about conferences and who was favored in each of them. And we both ranted and raved about SEMO, but they've been better than we thought they were going to be. Paxton DeLaurent is 2 times better than he was last year, and he was phenomenal last year. They're going to go as he goes. Love how you shouted that out. And I don't think Eastern Illinois has much ammunition for a fight like this.
Number 16, Rhode Island is at Hampton. Hampton jumped out last week and took the lead on William & Mary and then gave up 49 points in a row. I kind of expect the same thing here against Rhode Island, who is underrated. They're a top 20 team not a whole lot of people are talking about. Rams are pretty good, Stone. Prairie View A&M is at number 17, Incarnate Word. Prairie View comes in 2-3. Incarnate Word, we know what they've done this year and what they did last year. They're looking for victories to stack up. Prairie View A&M will be a game opponent for them. And I expect this one to be a football game for a good little bit. Prairie View has some players. Quarterback is pretty good. Defense has been okay so far. I think the matchups are pretty good for Prairie View. I don't think Incarnate Word walks away with this one with a blowout, but I do expect them to probably get the win at home.
Incarnate Word is in a spot here where they need to score 50 plus points and win by 30 just to kind of put themselves back in the camera frame. They're a team that we all easily forget about, but they're a team that also is really good and has experience in the playoffs and has a lot of good skill players backed by one of the best quarterbacks in the country in Zach Calzada. So stick with us during the break. When you come back, it's Chris Presto, linebacker, Southern Illinois, and Steve Gross. You're listening to the FCS Nation Radio. You're listening to FCS Nation Radio on the Palmetto Radio Network.
Thanks for hanging with us during the break. You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network. I'm Kevin. He's Stone Labanowitz. And Stone, it's time for the pick segment where we pick the biggest games taking place in FCS football. Up first, number 1, South Dakota State is at Northern Iowa.
You talked about this team getting prepared in a bye week. I don't think there's a team in the country that I like coming off of a bye week more than the Jackrabbits. For you and I, this one won't be fun. Give me it 42-14.
Like Stone mentioned, Jackrabbits coming off a week off. Northern Iowa going to try to throw the ball. Not a good combination. Take number 1, South Dakota State on the road at Northern Iowa. Jackrabbits win 38-17. Northern Colorado is at number 2, Montana State.
In the preview segment, I talked about Montana State not playing any games this year that we really have anything to take away from or really anything to preview. I think this is a snoozer that finishes the way of the Bobcats, of course, 33-10.
I mean, everybody's talking about NoCo, but if they know me, they know I'm more of a SoCo guy. So I'm going to take number 2, Montana State in Bozeman over Northern Colorado, 42-10. Number 7, North Dakota is at number 3, North Dakota State.
Kev, let me ask you something. I've known you for a long time now. I borderline love love you. Have you ever been thrown out of a club?
The Constitution says I don't have to say anything.
But come on, I mean, but seriously, have you been thrown out of a club before once in your life? I mean, if I had to guess, I'd say yes, but have you?
I don't go to such establishments, Stone. I normally spend my time at Bible studies and discussion groups to help my intellect.
Why are you stuttering? I mean, this question's got you nervous. Kev, I'm visualizing you right now getting picked up. I don't know. You're 17 years old getting picked up and thrown out of the club. That's exactly what I think the Bison do to North Dakota. And I like this.
That's sort of a thing that might have happened to me when I was 47. I don't have to be 17. I was much more temperate when I was 17 than I was when I'm older. So there you go.
You are so right. Listen, I'm visualizing it right now. Actually, 38, loudmouth, you caused trouble with the wrong guy. That's what's going to happen with the Bison and the Fighting Hawks. I think this is a game that I talked about in the preview segment being really, really scary for North Dakota. You're taking a trip to the Fargo Dome. I think they win this game by 20-plus points. Give me the Bison 40-17.
I think it'll be closer than that because the Fighting Hawks, they're going to show up. They're going to fight, Stone. That's a tough football team. But North Dakota State just got too much on the offensive and defensive lines, I think, for the Fighting Hawks to handle. Take number 3, North Dakota State at home in the Fargo Dome over number 7, North Dakota, 28-17. Number 4, South Dakota is at Murray State.
Yeah, South Dakota's going to beat them up pretty bad. Do I think they score 72? No, I don't. Do I think they score 50-plus? I actually do. Give me South Dakota 54. Murray State, 7.
You know, I don't think that's the Yotes style, Stone. I like South Dakota in this one on the road over Murray State, but I think they'll keep it sensible with the score. Take the Yotes on the road over Murray State, 31-3. Number 5, Central Arkansas is at Others Receiving Votes, Abilene Christian.
As a wise man always told me, not much to see here. 35-17 the finish.
I think Central Arkansas comes out and they get that fast start that you and all their fans and their coaching staff and everybody associated with that football team has been looking for. They'll get that on the road at Abilene Christian. Take number 5, Central Arkansas over Others Receiving Votes, Abilene Christian. Bears, 35-17. Number 6, UC Davis is at Portland State.
Yeah, give me copy-paste, 35-17. I think that's actually how this game finishes here. I think UC Davis has a lot to play for right now and still feels like they have a lot to prove. And I think they take it out on Portland State.
Stone, I think you're right on this one. Take number 6, UC Davis on the road at Portland State. Aggies, 41. Vikings, 14. Weber State is at number 8, Montana.
I mean, I really don't know which way to go here. I'm obviously not picking Weber State, but from a scoreline perspective, I don't have a read on Montana. I don't think anybody has a read on Montana. Logan Fife, quarterback, absolutely on fire last week. If that continues, they'll score more than 30 points. I just want to go on the lower end here. Give me the Grizzlies, 27-14.
I like Montana on this one, too. They're going to have to play some defense at some point. I know there's some guys missing back there, 3 guys in particular. But last week, Junior Bergen had his coming out party as a wide receiver. I expect that to continue. Take number 8, Montana, at home at Washington Grizzly Stadium over Weber State, 35-21. Number 18, Northern Arizona, is at number 9, Idaho.
I think this Idaho defense shows up on the front of the newspaper here. They're going to win this game 27-3.
I agree with you on the outcome, Stone. But I think number 9, Idaho, will have a little bit more offense this week. And Northern Arizona's defense played really well last week against UC Davis. But Idaho's offense is more dynamic than what the Aggies have. And I expect that to show this week in the Kibbe Dome. Take number 9, Idaho, over number 18, Northern Arizona, 34-20. Number 11, Villanova is at Stony Brook.
Give me Villanova, 30-10.
I think it'll be closer than that, Stone. I think Villanova's in for a dogfight all day, and this is my upset special of the week.
Whoa.
Take Stony Brook at home over number 11, Villanova, 28-27.
You sure you don't want to take that back?
I am absolutely positive, Stone.
You're spending your upset special on the week on Stony Brook beating Villanova. Woo-hoo-hoo.
Number 12, Tarleton State is at Southern Utah.
Yeah, I think Tarleton State wins this game. So much offense. And I don't think Southern Utah gets the amount of stops that they need to win this game. So give me Tarleton State 40, Southern Utah 28.
I disagree, sir. I'm going with Southern Utah on this one for a rare double upset special of the week for me row even. Take Southern Utah at home over number 12, Tarleton State, 37-34. Chattanooga is at number 13, East Tennessee State.
What do you say we keep this train rolling? Here's my upset special of the week. It's the Chattanooga Mocs. Everybody fell asleep. I'll be your alarm. Chattanooga wins this game 28-23.
I don't agree with you, sir. I think the East Tennessee State team is a team of destiny. A lot of things going on around them. They'll tune out the noise, play good football, and they'll handle Chattanooga and Johnson City. Take number 13, East Tennessee State at home over Chattanooga, 31-30. Number 14, William & Mary is at Towson.
One of those games that it's just really hard to predict whether they're going to be on fire and playing really good football or it's going to be one of those 23-20 games. I'm going with the latter. Give me the Tribe, 23-20.
I think it'll be a low-scoring affair, too. Towson is a much-improved football team under Pete Shinnick. They've got their stuff together. They'll prove it this week, but it just won't be enough. William & Mary will squeak out of there, and they'll win. 17-14. Number 15, SEMO is at Eastern Illinois.
Yeah, not much to see here. Paxton DeLauren finds pay dirt through the air. Five times, Kev. Five times. Do that math. 7 times 5. That's 35. They're going to find pay dirt on the ground twice. So tack on another 14. That's 49. They're going to win this game 52-10.
I think SEMO wins too, Stone, but I think Eastern Illinois will put up a little bit more of a fight than that. Give me number 15, SEMO, on the road over Eastern Illinois, 35-10.
You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network.
Because of the path that he sent me on, that I have saved countless other babies. I like to think that maybe one day you'll be an old man like me, talking a younger man's ear off, explaining to him how you took the sourest lemon that life has to offer and turned it into something resembling lemonade.
Thanks for sticking with us during the break. You were listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network. You guys know what time it is. Each and every week, I bring on an honorary captain of whatever week it is during the season. This week, a special one, a tandem edition. Steve Gross, managing partner at Northwestern Mutual St. Louis, and our Saluki Dog representative linebacker, sophomore, Chris Presto. Steve, I'll start with you. Thank you so much for joining the show this week and being an honorary captain of the week.
Great to
and
be here.
Chris, for you as well, I appreciate you giving the show some time.
Of course.
This guy's is, I say it every time, but it is my favorite part of the week. It truly is. I'm not exaggerating there. When I say honorary captain of the week, our audience knows the 30, 40, 50,000 that listen every single week. And for everybody around the country driving right now, what you're hearing is something near and dear to not only me, not only Steve, but to Chris as well, and plenty. Let me not even say plenty, thousands affected by cancer around the entire country. Northwestern Mutual last season created a nationwide challenge. 13 athletes from 11 different FCS schools competed to raise the most money. Last year, $50,000. This year, new goal. I'm going to let Chris and Steve talk about that goal, what the number is, and how confident they are that we achieved that. This year, 12 schools have teamed up, 12 athletes within FCS Nation, and they are trying to put a stop towards childhood cancer. We're leading the fight together. I'm super excited about having you guys on. Chris, when you got this opportunity, when you were approached, did you kind of have that light switch moment when you were approached to be a part of this?
Yeah, you know, you hit that on the head. That's exactly the feeling when I was asked about it. You know, got to lead this fight to stop this stuff.
And Steve, when Chris was brought to you, I'm sure so many stories, and I've had conversations with his head coach, Nick Hill, and a quote that he dropped that stuck with me. And I still reiterate it to people when talking about Chris is that if Nick Hill, who's just a girl dad, had a son, he'd want him to grow up like Chris. Why Chris? Why did we choose Chris to lead our fight against childhood cancer?
Yeah, great question. And really an important question, because we were looking for the right athlete, and we wanted to find somebody that really, you know, cared about this at their core and wanted to make a real impact with it. Chris has a personal story, which I'm sure he'll share a little bit later. But, you know, this idea of really wanting to make an impact and have some passion towards this is really important, because, you know, we're going to do some work to raise money for this important cause. And we got to have the right person.
I love it. The energy. We're going to do some work. Steve Gross says, again, having a chat here with Steve Gross, managing partner, Northwestern Mutual St. Louis. And of course, the linebacker for the Salukis, Chris Presto. Chris, Steve kind of just threw me an alley-oop. I want you to bring it home here. Childhood cancer is near and dear to you. I talked about when you were approached, kind of what it did scientifically to you. What you were about to speak on kind of puts an exclamation point on that. Why is this so near and dear to you? And what does this partnership mean to you as an individual?
Yeah, you know, everybody listening has had interactions with cancer, you know, but not everyone has had interactions with childhood cancer. You know, my high school coach his daughter's best friend's actually fighting for her life right now. You know, it's sad to see, but as my high school coach, you got to just keep going. You know, you got to be there for your daughter as her friend's going through all this, and her family. Like, this is where Alex's Lemonade Stand helps out, paying for stuff, the medical, and helping with financial things, and that's why we need to raise all this money.
Absolutely. And Steve, for you, are there any stories or any family members, friends that have been affected by cancer that make you just feel a little more passionate about what we're doing? You talked about we're going to do work. Why is that?
Yeah, of course. I think, you know, Chris hit the nail on the head when he's talking about we've all been impacted by cancer in one way, shape, or another. My mother was a four-time cancer survivor. And so when she passed away, she actually passed away from natural causes. But, you know, without research, without treatments, she wouldn't have survived four times battling different types of cancer. And a good friend of mine lost a son to neuroblastoma, which is the same disease that Alex ultimately, same type of cancer that Alex passed away from. It's very near and dear to my heart and our firm's heart to contribute to Alex's and do our part.
Yeah, really cool stat here. Since 2012, Northwestern Mutual has donated more than, hold your breath, $60 million to the cause. Now that's overall. Northwestern Mutual has funded more than 700,000 hours of research through their partnership with Alex's Lemonade Stand and their foundation. That stat alone is ridiculous. So when Steve mentions, we're going to do work to raise some money, and you can just hear it in Chris's voice. He's passionate about it. He wants you guys to donate. He wants to win the Lemon Challenge. Northwestern Mutual has been raising not only awareness, but a heck of a lot of money to put an end to this thing. I appreciate you guys for sharing your stories. And for the audience out there, you can tell it just means a little more to these guys and they want to do something. Of course, we joke about Chris wanting to win the Lemon Trophy, but it's all organic, right? He actually means that because he's going to take it home as a prize, right? And Chris, I'd imagine, I'm not going to speak for you, but bringing that trophy home to Jack Daniel's daughter's friend's family, I mean, an opportunity to do something like that, I'm sure would mean a lot to you, right?
Yeah, I mean, listen, winning isn't that big of a deal, but, you know, raising all this money as a community, all the FCS schools, but obviously we want to win. I mean, raising the money is the ultimate goal. Bringing that home to him, with just bringing that home to that family, we can say that we helped them. And that's the biggest thing.
I love it. I love it. Chris, you had an interview that you did prior, and there was something that you said that I took and I almost wrote it down. You talked about facing adversity, going through problems, and feeling as a football player in a locker room, in a meeting room. Right now, obviously, the Salukis 2-3, not where you guys want to be at the moment, but you talked about somebody always has it worse. I want you to reiterate that for the audience and kind of what you meant by that.
Yeah, I mean, Coach Hill does a great job reminding us every single day, winning or losing, how adversity is going to happen. Adversity is coming, storms are coming, but it's football. You know, it's not life. When you got to go out and face real adversity in life, that's real. We're not doing that right now. We're just playing football. And there's people out there struggling way more than we are. And we got to remember that and just be grateful to be waking up every morning.
Steve, when you hear Chris, who is only a sophomore in college, has not walked across the stage, has not been in Carbondale for all that long, speak the way that he's speaking right now, and just getting kind of a peek behind the curtain of who he is under the helmet, I'll ask, how important is philanthropic leadership to you, your team, your office, all the above? And how cool is it that we don't typically get a chance to hear from athletes in this light? Typically, it's I had this many tackles and I did this for the team. But to kind of get, like I said, a peek behind the curtains as to who Chris is, how cool is that, that this initiative has created an opportunity like that?
Yeah, what I just heard Chris say and what he sounds like is a leader, right? And we're all going to face adversity. And what's so important in that is our mindset. And whether that adversity and you're a young man and is in a football game, or it's something like, you know, I've got a child or a family member battling cancer, mindset is so important when you come up against adversity. So that's what I'm hearing from Chris. The importance of somebody like that taking on this challenge with us. You know, we had the opportunity. Liz Scott, who was Alex's mother, came to St. Louis and gave us an $800,000 check to deliver to a research doctor at WashU. And that was an amazing opportunity to do that. What's even more amazing about that story is that doctor's research was 2 years later. There was a child in his daughter's class who the very research that this doctor was working on saved his daughter's friend's life. And so, you know, we think about these charities, and sometimes we can think they're big national charities, but they come right, they deliver dollars right into our own community. And that's what, you know, Chris is doing here, and he's got his personal story and the opportunity to just make a difference in people's lives that really, really need it.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Steve. Alex Lemonade Stand and their foundation, it's a leading childhood cancer research organization. Not only does it provide support for local families who need to travel, but also not local. Steve just talked about Liz Scott, co-founder of Alex Lemonade Stand's foundation, traveling to them and presenting them with a check for a little under $1 million. That's how much it means to them. We'll get into Alex Lemonade Stand Foundation a little later on in the show because they require a little bit more time. What they've done in the decades that they've spent doing it, it's very, very impressive stuff. Steve, you touched on something and you used the word community, getting behind something, getting behind somebody. Chris, in his first week, has already raised just about $800. I'll say that one more time. Actually, it hasn't even been a week.
Right.
Chris, in less than a week, has raised $800. How inspiring has it been to watch not only the Carbondale community, but his family and the circle that he ran with back home and fans of the Salukis that are watching all over the country? How cool is it to see the community kind of get behind Chris in this?
Yeah, I think it's so super exciting to see this in less than a week with what Chris has done to get the word out, what the Carbondale community has done to embrace this. And we're just getting started. Like, you know, people are just learning about this. And what I love about the Carbondale community is like the values of the individuals in Carbondale. And when they learn about this and they see what Chris is doing, I think we're going to raise some record amount of dollars.
I'd love to hear. Let's talk about that record amount of dollars. Steve, last year, $50,000. It was our first go round. The goal's more than quadrupled. The goal is what, Chris? And do you think we can get it done?
Yeah. I mean, the goal's $250,000 this year.
Mm.
And my goal individually is $20,000, but I really want to get up to $40,000. And I think we can get it done. You know, I think we can take this thing home.
You just heard Chris Presto, linebacker for the Salukis, said that his goal, $40,000. Saluki fans, it is on you at this point to help Chris get to that goal. He also mentioned the $250,000 mark. Before we kick things off this year with all 12 schools and athletes, that was the goal we had in mind. Of course, face value, when your ears first hear it, sounds like a lot of money, but if everybody pitches in, can be a dollar, can be $10, or you participate in the Lemon Top Challenge, which I'll have Chris explain how to do so. There's also money that Northwestern Mutual matches and donates themselves. Really cool thing we do with the hashtag Lemon Top Challenge. Chris, have you had a chance to go through the other 11 guys on the list this season to see who you're competing against for that Lemon Trophy? In my opinion, I think it's the coolest part about this entire partnership, this entire initiative, because they're world-class athletes. You guys are handpicked. This is no coincidence. There's a guy, David Walker, on that list, Central Arkansas, who's going to be a first or second day draft pick in the NFL. And if you don't think this means a lot to him, probably more than winning a few games this season, you are dead wrong. Chris, have you scoped the guys you're competing with out? Are you scared of anybody or no? You got full-blown confidence.
No. Full-blown confidence. Ain't scared of anybody.
That's a Saluki way right there. Keeping things moving. Again, having a chat here with Steve Gross, managing partner of Northwestern Mutual St. Louis. And as I mentioned before, Chris Presto, linebacker, Southern Illinois. It's our honorary captains with an S, that's plural, of the week segment. You hear it each and every show here at FCS Nation Radio. We bring it to you. Our challenge, of course, as you guys know, is to raise money and awareness through athletes that participate each and every weekend all throughout the FCS. Steve, this one's for you here. I want to talk about your internship program and Northwestern Mutual's internship program as a whole. I always pull stats each and every episode because the numbers are kind of jarring to hear. And if we have any new listeners or first-time listeners, 52,000 college students since 1967 have participated in Northwestern Mutual's internship program. A little under 100%, and I'm sure if it was legal, they would put 100%, because it's probably the case, have reported that the program was instrumental for their careers and kind of set the path for them moving forward, whether it was during college or as you were leaving college. Steve, for you and your office in St. Louis, how important is your guys' internship program? What's it mean to you?
Yes. Our internship is at the top of the list and super important for multiple reasons. you know, one of the big ones is we know it is it's a great opportunity to meet young men and women and see who amongst that group is a potential, you know, full-time financial advisor that could go on and make a huge impact in our community in that way. But it's a great opportunity to test drive, truly test drive the career as a financial advisor. So you're not getting coffee and doing paperwork. You are hands-on in meetings with people, with our experienced team, you know, doing client meetings, seeing how plans are put together and executed. And it's a great opportunity to see, is this a career that somebody might want?
Yeah, and how smart is it, or how beneficial is it, I should ask more so, for you to grab an athlete and for them to be an intern? What are some things that you've seen with former athletes or current athletes who intern with you guys, and why do they kind of have a head up on all of the other interns?
Yeah, so I think the one thing that that an athlete, especially a D1 athlete, is being an athlete in college, it's a full-time job.
You're damn right it is, Steve. You're damn right it is.
Itself, right. And so, you know, I like people who, you know, busy people make things happen and get stuff done. So you got a full school schedule. You've got a full-time job as an athlete. You've got friends and social schedules and family responsibilities and all those things. Why we're attracted to athletes is, when you build a business, you got to be able to manage a lot of stuff and multitask, and you're very, very busy. That experience, while it might not be in a particular field, it builds character. And, you know, we're looking for character first and foremost.
I love it. Hey, was that a pitch, Steve, to Chris to become an intern at your guys' office?
Planting seeds, Stone.
That's all you can do. Chris, I'm watching his eyebrows raise up and down like, you know, I've never really given it some thought, but now I might. I love it. It means a lot to you guys. The internship program, top notch, one of the best that I've heard. Some of the stats, again, very jarring when I kind of rattled them off. And Steve, you touched on something that I tend to bring up on a lot of our interviews, whether it's just a regular athlete that I bring on, a quarterback from around the country, or one of my honorary captains of the week. We have a conversation about life after football, and I don't think it's spoken about enough. Kids go through college, they walk across that stage, and they go home and don't really have a plan. I think touching on the internship program and what you guys do as a whole, how important is that to you? And I would also ask, how beneficial is being a part of your internship program for life after football?
Yes, we actually have a program we did at another university called Life After Athletics. And it's the same concept, right? And so most athletes are not going to go on and be in the professional ranks, but what we like to do is help them learn that, like, the lessons that you had to have being an athlete and how you can apply that personally and professionally in the next phase of life with a career. And, you know, for those where the financial services industry or career is something of interest, we've got an amazing opportunity to present. But our internship, I think one of the best things that people get through the experience with our internship is not only the career knowledge to test drive, you know, do I want to be a financial advisor? But same thing. No matter what they go on, your 98% of people say that this internship was instrumental to their career. More, you know, 52,000 people didn't become financial advisors. Most of Right. those people went on and did other things. And the personal and professional development that you get and the leadership development that you get, I think, are the greatest things you walk away with or take and internalize to build a financial services business if you stay.
Beautifully said there, Steve. I appreciate that. And Chris, I hope you were listening. Let's switch gears to the foundation. Alex's Lemonade Stand, Liz Scott. We already talked about her, the co-founder of the foundation. We just wrapped September. September was Childhood Cancer Awareness Month. And every day, guys, more than 1,000 children worldwide are diagnosed with childhood cancer. More than 1,000 children worldwide are diagnosed with childhood cancer. It's the leading cause of death by disease in children between the ages of 1 and 19 in the U.S. Here's the kicker. Only 4% of the federal government's total funding for cancer research is dedicated to childhood cancer each and every year. Steve, you already talked about Liz Scott presenting you guys with a check. What are some other stories or instances, run-ins that you've had with Alex's Lemonade Stand Foundation that have kind of stuck with you and reminded you, yeah, this is why we got in business with them and this is why we help each other out?
So a couple of things come to mind. One is what you just said. There's only 4% of the federal government's total funding hits cancer research. So, you know, that tells me that that's up to us to make it an impact there.
Bingo.
And like most things that you want to really get done in life, you've got to take responsibility for and not count on somebody else to do it. So we're up for that challenge. But I will tell you, I have met too many, but I've met some kids in this process that we have invited to events that are just, you know, amazing young little boys and girls. And their resilience and their attitude and their positivity while facing such difficult, dire circumstances is like, it's beyond inspiring. And so when you get to meet some of these kids, you just walk away and you won't be the same. And so it's easy to get behind something like this and make a difference.
That's an interesting perspective. I love it. Having a chance to meet them and understand that it's not all darkness and cloudy in their lives. I've seen cases where children affected by cancer are more positive, right? Whether it's just because they're a child or they understand that life's bigger than who they are and what's going on around them. It's a really cool perspective from you, Steve, and you dropped something in there that I want to pick up. Quote, it's up to us, right? Because only 4% the federal government funds childhood cancer research. Chris, let's use this as an opportunity for you to call out Saluki fans. Steve said it's up to us. I think what he meant by that was it's up to Saluki fans. So Chris, call them out, give them reasons why you deserve the Lemon Trophy. And of course, a little biased myself being a former Saluki, why you're just going to cruise to a victory this year.
I mean, because why not? Why shouldn't we win? Why? What other reason than that? I mean, that's the simplest answer I can give.
Simple as that. Steve, call out Saluki fans that need to donate to Chris and your network office.
Call out to Saluki fans and the whole community in Carbondale. We've got an amazing young man here that's really trying to make a difference in kids' lives. And it's an opportunity for us to show support for that and support for him to take the time and energy that he's putting into us. I know we can raise $40,000 in this community and in our community. We're all in St. Louis to do this too. Let's get this done and bring home the trophy.
I love it. Let's do it. Let's talk football as we wrap here, guys. Saluki's 2-3 through 5 weeks. Obviously, Chris, you know that that's not the standard for you guys. I'm sure you've had that just absolutely thrown in your face day after day after day. But what do you guys need to do better from here on out as you host Illinois State this weekend? What's something that the team is just not hitting on or not executing right now?
I mean, we just got to play a full game on defense, especially. We got to get out there, start strong and finish strong. You know, throughout the season, we've had games where we started strong and tailed off towards the end, like Incarnate Word, you know, up big, and they started coming back in the fourth quarter and that became a real game. And like last week, South Dakota did not come out strong at all and dug ourselves into a hole that was too big to come out of. That's it. We just got to play a full game.
It's as simple as that sometimes. Chris, you need to play a full game, especially on the defensive side. We have a chance this weekend to notch a home Missouri Valley Football Conference victory. The Missouri Valley, the SEC of the FCS. It's where the best teams live. It's where the defending national champion lives. How big is getting a win at home against a team in your own conference for a team that's 2-3 right now?
It's huge. I mean, it's bigger than them. It's not about them at all. It's about us. It's about us finding our rhythm, get back into this and winning out. Honestly, that's all it's about. We got 7 more games for a reason. You know, let's go out 7-0 and win this whole thing.
Steve, I talked about the Salukis hosting Illinois State this week. It's a huge game inside the conference. Let me get a score prediction from you.
Score prediction. All right. Mm-hmm, well, Chris is talking about the defense stepping up. So I don't know, Chris, you feel like you got a shutout in you to make a statement?
Ooh. Yeah, we can get it done.
All right. All right. We're going to start positive here, Stone. And we're going to say 24-0.
24-0. Just a goose egg.
Make it happen.
Redbirds not finding happen. Redbirds not finding the end zone. You heard that from Mr. Steve Gross, managing partner, Northwestern Mutual St. Louis. Chris, 24-0. That's the standard. Steve gave it to you. You go ahead and tell your team and tell your head coach this is how we're winning this weekend. Seriously, yes, guys, I can't thank you guys enough for being honorary captains of the week. I love what we do. This is my favorite segment. You guys have been awesome. The passion just seeps through. People driving right now, people with their headphones in, listening, I think they would agree with me that it's not very hard to tell. So, Steve, I'll start with you. If there's any parting words, again, to Saluki fans or anybody around the country who's willing to donate that just hasn't done it yet, the floor is yours.
Yeah. I want to thank everybody listening and who cares about this cause and cares about childhood cancer. I want to thank Chris for your efforts, and really looking forward to the rest of this season and hitting $40,000. And Stone, thank you as well. I would just say let's get this done, Carbondale. Let's Saluki fans, let's rally around Chris and let's make a statement from Saluki Nation that like we can win, we can lead this thing and make a big difference. So I know that we can and definitely can with Chris's leadership.
Make a statement like a 24-0 victory, huh?
That's right.
Let's get that done. Hey, it's so easy to donate to Chris, FCSNationRadio.com. On the right side of the screen, Alex Lemonade Stand in the Foundation has its own landing page. You click that, you see the rankings, you see the athletes listed, Chris Presto and the Gross Network office right there. I already talked about Chris having $800. Chris, thanks so much for being the honorary captain of the week and good luck this weekend.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks, Stone.
You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network.
That brings us to the end of another episode of FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network. FCS Nation is co-hosted by Mr. Stone Labanowitz, produced by Sam Cittadini. I'm executive producer and host Kevin Marshall, thanking you for making FCS Nation a small part of your football week. I'd like to invite all of y'all right back here next week for another episode of FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network. And like I always do, y'all, I'd like to remind you that life's a lot like football. You play by the rules and the penalties won't kill you. Until next week, so long, everybody.